This is episode 27 of Paranormal Stories. This week, the books are Soul to God, A Soul's Journey Over Many Lives by Michael Kramer, and Alien in the Mirror, Extraterrestrial Contact Theories and Evidence by Randall Fitzgerald. As you may know, I produce two podcasts, the Past Lives podcast and the Alien UFO podcast, and it's here that I combine the two. When I have guests on my podcasts, I read their books to research and work out questions for the episodes. And when reading these books, I always find such fascinating information, which never makes it into the podcast. And here I get a chance to give you a peek into the book. I've put links to the books in the show notes, and I did seek permission to record these extracts from the books from the authors, and they kindly said yes. And just so you know, there is a Past Lives podcast Facebook group, and if you'd like to join, you'd be very welcome. And if you enjoy the podcast, be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. So this week I'm going to start by reading from Randall Fitzgerald's book, Alien in the Mirror, Extraterrestrial Contact Theories and Evidence. This comes from section 3, which is called Contactees and Abductees. And this is from a part entitled, What Are They Trying to Tell Us? And this is what Randall has written. Throughout history, encounters have been reported between humans and sky-dwelling entities which communicate either telepathically or in disembodied voices. Moses, Ezekiel, Jesus Christ, Muhammad, and Joan of Arc, among others, claimed contact with a higher intelligence which inspired them to influence human events. In 1656, Jesuit priest and scholar Athanasius Kircher wrote a book alleging that two angels had accompanied him on an out-of-body excursion to the moon, the sun, and five planets. Joseph Smith founded the Mormon Church in the early 1800s after encountering two entities which reportedly descended from an aerial craft over New York State. Once the age of air flight dawned with the hot air balloons, a Russian mystic and medium, Helena Blavatsky, attracted a cultish following in England and the US in the late 19th century by alleging telepathic contact with spirits of the dead and advanced beings on the planet Venus. During the 1950s, dozens of contactees, nearly all of them American, generated publicity with tales of having encountered UFO occupants visiting Earth from other planets. UFO groups, which were seeking scientific legitimacy, actively disparaged the contactees, viewing them as little more than distracting embarrassment. In 1963, the entire phenomenon took a leap in visibility, if not credibility, when a New Hampshire couple, Betty and Barney Hill, revealed under hypnosis their belief that UFO occupants had abducted them for 2 hours and subjected them to painful medical tests. Their account produced a best-selling book and a 1975 television movie starring James Earl Jones. Over the next 3 decades, a veritable floodgate opened, releasing remarkably similar stories into popular culture. 6 woodcutters in Arizona told authorities in 1975 of seeing a UFO zap a 7th member of their crew, who disappeared for 5 days after allegedly being abducted by the craft's humanoid occupants. A year later, 3 religious Kentucky housewives related similar abduction events of a nighttime UFO encounter while returning from a restaurant. Thousands of such reports have since surfaced worldwide, most describing abductors with a resemblance to the grey dwarfish, insect-eyed aliens portrayed in the 1977 movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Of course, as UFO enthusiasts are quick to point out, the model for Steven Spielberg's Aliens came from astronomer J. Allen Hynek, the movie's technical consultant, who based the composite on numerous reported cases of alien encounters. Still another leap in visibility for the phenomenon occurred in 1994 with the re-release of Harvard University psychiatrist John Mack's book, Abduction: Human Encounters with Aliens. He revealed how hypnotic regression of more than 100 persons had convinced him aliens are kidnapping Earthlings for medical experiments to produce hybrid species better suited to adaptation if and when the planet's ecosystems are destroyed by pollution. Dr. Mack's stature in the psychiatric field prompted widespread attention to his book, with a prominent review in the New York Times and a guest spot on the Oprah Winfrey Show. Mack's success at generating media attention can be partly attributed to the ground broken by Whitley Strieber's 1987 book, Communion, which fixated public interest on the alien abduction theme as it hovered for many months in the New York Times bestseller list. Subsequently, a nationwide survey by the Roper Organization confirmed widespread public intoxication with the subject. This random sample of 5,947 American adults in 1993 asked five questions, such as, have you awakened paralyzed and sensed the strange presence in your room, experienced periods of missing time, or found unexplained scars on your body? These questions were designed to measure the possible frequency of alien encounters. About 2% of the sample answered yes to at least four of the questions, supposedly making them prime abductee candidates. Extrapolated out of the entire population, that would make 3.7 million Americans may have been abducted, or at least possess the attributes which abduction researchers believe would constitute evidence of alien contact. As an investigator, my own immersion into this realm can be traced to 1978, the year I heard a story which, if remotely true, seemed to constitute a best case of evidence for alien visitation. As first related by Robert Emeniger in his 1974 book, UFOs Past, Present and Future, a shy woman in southern Maine had supposedly convinced Naval Intelligence, the US Air Force and the CIA that she was in communication with an alien named Afa. She had allegedly successfully answered highly technical and scientific questions by channeling Afa through automatic writing. Even more astounding, she had taught a naval intelligence officer how to communicate with Afa, and he summoned one of the alien spacecraft, which appeared over Washington, D.C., witnessed by a group of CIA and naval intelligence officials. Acting in my role as co-editor of Second Look magazine, I tracked down most of the principals in this case and interviewed many of them at length and in person, including the contactee herself. What emerged after several months of research was a story different from the myth that had evolved, yet equally unsettling in its implications. As a young girl, Frances Swan wanted to know the secrets of the universe. She read and studied everything esoteric that rural Maine had to offer. She went to seances, sought out spiritualists, used the Ouija board. Local farmers sometimes asked her to intuit the whereabouts of their lost cattle, and her predictions rarely disappointed them. She was a joiner, a respected member of a South Berwick Maine community. She joined the Congregational Church, and after her daughter was born, was elected to the school board and served as president of the area's Girl Scout Leaders Association. On Halloween night of 1953, as she stood on a ladder hanging decorations in the local Grange Hall, all of her searching for a deeper meaning in life abruptly ended. A distinguished stranger walked into the hall and attracted Mrs. Swan's attention. Her memory of his appearance would fade over the years, but she never forgot the impact his presence had on her. She said, "He said later he was supposed to speak to me. He was supposed to touch my hand by shaking hands, but he couldn't get up the nerve because of all the people around. I talked to him and I was the only one that talked to him that night. He seemed strange. He didn't tell me anything then, but ever after that night, if I looked in the direction he came in, I could almost see him. It was sort of like an impression had been left, and that was exactly what he came for." About 6 months after this encounter, Mrs. Swan began hearing in her left ear a shrill whistle, a soft, flat, musical note A. On April 30th, 1954, at 5 p.m, she received her first message. It said, "We come, we'll help keep peace on EU, do not be frightened." On May 2nd at 2:30 p.m, according to scrupulous notes she kept, she again heard the ringing noise and felt compelled to scrawl with a pencil, "We are on moon, we are being watched constantly. We are ready to make flight to Earth under cover of barrage of weather balloons." The entity, speaking through Mrs. Swan's automatic writing, identified itself as Afa from Uranus, Bell Flight Signal M4M4, cruising above Earth in a spaceship 753,454 feet across. Afa said he was the man Mrs. Swan had seen at Grange Hall in October. He was on a mission to place a network of magnetic lanes over the danger spots which will reinforce the wasted magnetism brought about by the sin and greedy hearts of men on your planet. "Do not be frightened at anything we may ask of you," Afa counseled Mrs. Swan. "You are selected to contact your people." Okay, so I'm going to move on to the next book now. This is written by Michael Kramer, and the book is called Soul to God, A Soul's Journey Over Many Lives. And so this comes from chapter 14, which is called Time Travelers. And this is what Mike has written. The key to moving forward is to let go of a past that is holding us back. In the following three chapters, I share difficult memories from a traumatic Egyptian life that I had left unresolved for thousands of years. In this life, I was forced to stop running, to turn and face my anger, judgment, and misconceptions, to understand and eventually forgive. It all started in 1970 during an alternative college meditation class. We were in a small satellite classroom in a neighbouring city, miles away from my college campus and the usual curriculum. Our professor had invited James, a psychiatrist friend, to teach New Age theories on the subconscious mind. A student of Carl Jung, the famous Swiss psychiatrist who founded analytical psychology, James was tall, middle-aged, dressed in corduroys, a blue shirt, and a sports coat. James had us introduce ourselves and then reviewed the subjects we'd been exploring that day, including a lecture on the subconscious mind. He explained, "Our brain is the biological storage bank of sensory experiences, emotions, and thoughts we've experienced in life. Besides being a biological memory bank, our brain acts as the receptor and transmitter of thought. We are each connected to a quantum reality that encompasses our life in the physical. Some refer to this reality as the universal mind. This universal mind contains the personal memory bank we've developed over many lifetimes. We are connected and interact with this memory bank on an unconscious level. Most of us are unaware of their connection to this expansive field of reality because it is so natural, intuitive, and an integral part of our life. Some therapists describe this connection to universal mind as our subconscious. Everything that has happened to us in this life and our past is stored in our subconscious mind. We don't usually experience remembering past lives because most of us are not born with conscious access to those memories. Those memories are stored at a level just beyond typical human awareness. Today we'll learn a technique to relax our mental filters to access past life memories. In the last half of our class, I will lead you in an experiential exercise to explore this concept." James explained, "Information is sent from our subconscious mind to the conscious mind in small chunks. For example, if a lion is running towards us, we don't need to remember that our father was killed by a lion while hunting antelope when we were 10. We just need to react and run. So our brain sends a jolt of adrenal fear with the message that we need to run fast. Afterward, assuming you are now safely up a tree, you can reflect on what just happened. Your subconscious can then provide details of what happened to your father. This brings me to the next point. When we first remember a past life, our memories often include the death scene. In this scenario, you didn't make it to the tree in time. What happened at death holds a bundle of life information that soul carries into the future to be eventually processed and understood. Any trauma in our physical lives needs to be ultimately processed, so the memory of that event exists only as helpful information. Lions can be dangerous to your health. To process a traumatic memory, we need to first recognize it, second, understand it, and third, release any trauma connected to that event to proceed with a peaceful, focused life. It's unnecessary to bring the fear of lions into each life. We just need to learn to avoid circumstances where we might be attacked by one. Life is a process of becoming more aware and making sound judgments. Another example is a dog may have bitten us when we were 3. As an adult, we may not remember being bitten by a dog, but we experience dog phobia. We fear dogs without understanding why. Our subconscious mind doesn't forget anything that happens to us. It protects us by providing what it considers, from that child's perspective, a reasonable fear of all dogs. Through talk therapy, hypnosis, or meditation, the original traumatic memory can be recalled, re-experienced, understood from an adult's viewpoint, and released. You are now free of your dog phobia and can enjoy playing with your friend's dog. Incidents in past lives can affect us in the same way. We fear certain circumstances or are attracted to certain people, places, or historical events for reasons we may not understand. We may have natural talents or abilities from a past life that manifest mysteriously, like Beethoven displaying musical genius at the age 5. The only purpose of examining a past life is to understand our current life circumstances and why we are the way we are. Our goal is to understand and release any negative baggage we brought into this life. He encouraged us to read more about this. James invited us to participate in a group experiment, a spiritual class field trip. We arranged our chairs in a circle to begin the guided meditation exercise. First, he instructed us to take several deep breaths to relax our bodies and focus our minds. James then suggested we imagine warm ocean waves rolling over us, washing away our worries and tensions. He next led us in an exercise to increase our awareness of spiritual energy. James asked us to focus on Amy, sitting in our circle. He directed us to hold a loving focus on Amy, blessing her for 30 seconds. He said, "Don't interject your ideas on her well-being, just bless her with love." Then James directed our attention to the next person to the right of Amy for 30 seconds, and so on until we'd completed the circle. With each person I blessed, I experienced increased energy flowing from my body to the other person. When my turn came to be blessed, we'd all become so open to spirit that I received an exhilarating inflow of loving energy from the group. There was nothing subtle about it. Receiving and giving so much unconditional love was a very pleasant, uplifting experience. Giving loving energy repeatedly opened my ability to receive more. It was fun. After the blessing circle exercise, James asked us to imagine walking up 10 steps on a spiral staircase. He led us one step at a time, suggesting we double our awareness and relaxation with every step. At the top of the stairs, he asked us to imagine our group floating up to a cloud, then carried along, guided by a wise intelligence as it drifted over the earth. He said, "The cloud takes us over lands and oceans, through time and space, to an event a wise guiding intelligence would like us to see. Trust it to show us what we need to see and understand." Then he instructed us to float down to earth and begin sharing what we saw or intuitively sensed while remaining in our pleasant trance state. As I imagined myself descending from the cloud, I was surprised to see a busy temple complex in ancient Egypt far below. I floated down through a tall building and hovered near the ceiling, watching a man, perhaps 60, lying in bed. He was dying. I didn't trust what I was seeing, so I said nothing. Best to play it safe, I thought. Wait to see what the others are seeing, if anything. Various people in class started sharing what they were inwardly seeing. Surprisingly, they all saw different views of the same scene. A pyramid, an ancient city, a vast temple complex, an Egyptian civilization, and an older man dying on a bed. I wondered, how could they be seeing what I'm seeing? James hadn't led us to this scene in any way. He'd only given us open suggestions like, go with what you are seeing. Just accept it, even if it doesn't make sense. Its meaning will become apparent afterwards. I marvelled that we were all witnessing the same inner vision as I studied the man on his deathbed. Linens covered his body to his chest. He had light brown skin and was bald, thin, and weak. Attendants were scurrying here and there, urgently carrying out the physician's orders. The man's wife and son were present. Enormous pillars supported the roof above him. I noticed the palace complex outside, far below. As I studied this scene, someone spoke up to describe the same scene I was seeing, an old man lying in bed dying. I mustered the confidence to speak. "He's been poisoned. He's not sure but suspects it. The high priest is responsible. I can feel the man's deep sadness. I can feel the poison working in his system. How weak he is." I was suddenly overwhelmed with his depression. I felt helpless, vulnerable, unloved, a failure. I'm experiencing his thoughts and emotions. He has so many regrets. He's wondering about his afterlife and what is coming. Is he an immortal being? He hates the ruling priestcraft, how they manipulated him and his son. Hello listeners, this is Simon. Now, as some of you know, I have a diploma in clinical hypnotherapy and I'm certified in past life regression therapy. And in the past few weeks, I've taken many clients through some amazing and healing past life regressions. and I conduct sessions over Zoom, and I've had clients from many countries around the world. Now, when you go through a past life regression, you will feel totally in control and remember everything. And also, I record the whole session and send you an MP3 afterwards. And this gives you space to relax and go with the flow, knowing that you can listen back later and analyse what you experienced if you need to. So if you ever wanted to explore your past lives in a single session, or have an issue you want to work on, you can go to my website at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk and book a free 20-minute consultation. And at the moment, I'm offering a 25% discount to everyone that has signed up to the Patreon campaign. The link is in the show notes. Okay, so I'm going to leave it there. It's fascinating stuff, and I do recommend both these books. This week, the books are Soul to God, A Soul's Journey Over Many Lives by Michael Kremer, and Alien in the Mirror, Extraterrestrial Contact Theories and Evidence by Randall Fitzgerald. If you want to buy the books, there is info and links in the show notes. Now, a great way to support this podcast is to sign up on Patreon. On the Past Lives Podcast Patreon, when you sign up for $5 a month, you get an extended episode every week. And for $2 a month, you get an extended episode every month. There is also a $12.50 Patreon tier, where every week you can get the extended episodes of the Past Lives podcast and the Alien UFO podcast extended episodes. And just go to patreon.com/pastlivespodcast. Click on the button on my homepage at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. And just so you know, if you're a patron, you get a 25% discount when you book a past life regression session with me. And I'm offering a free consultation that can be booked through my website. There is a Past Lives Podcast Facebook group, and if you'd like to join, you'd be very welcome. And if you enjoy this podcast, be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.